Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to Africa Link program. Coming to you straight from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up, the Secretary General of the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, Elhaj Assay, has pledged support to countries in Southern Africa that have been hit by an El Niño-induced drought.
We want to double our own response to that, and looking at in the next 7 months to 8 months until December to mobilize $150 million.
Hundreds of Cameroonians, Chadians and Central Africans have been expelled from Gabon and Equatorial Guinea due to security concerns. They are now appealing their governments to intervene.
I am surprised that the government of Equatorial Guinea is chasing away people who have helped transform their country of footpaths, forests, and abandoned cocoa plantations into a developing country.
Also on the program, we will be hearing how one young woman in South Africa is baking cakes for orphans to celebrate their birthdays. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, IFRC, has pledged $150 million to a new initiative to help drought-stricken Southern African countries. The pledge was announced by the Secretary General of the Federation, Elhaj Assay, as he concluded his tour to the countries hit by the drought. In South Africa, Lesotho, Swaziland, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, and Zimbabwe, last year's poor rains have been followed by an El Niño-driven drought that has delayed planting and stunted crops. At least 28 million people in Southern Africa are in urgent need of food aid. DW's Columbus Mavunga in Harare accompanied him to one of the most affected places in Zimbabwe and filed this report.
Those are women in Mudzi district on Zimbabwe-Mozambique border, about 250 kilometers east of Harare. They are praising the Red Cross Society upon the arrival of Elhaj Assay with the Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, IFRC. He visited the district to assess the food shortage situation. I asked him to explain what he saw in Zimbabwe.
Impact on the drought, it could be seen with naked eyes, that, normally fields that could have been full of, harvested product are quite empty. We only see, dry sand, all around. We see, people really having to suffice themselves with so little. But there are so the invisible impacts, which is much more important. What does it mean for a child to go to bed hungry? What does it mean for a mother to hear her children crying for food and not being able to satisfy those needs?
That is the situation here in Mudzi district, in which President Robert Mugabe's government recent assessment said more than 85% of the population needs food assistance. However, that assistance seemed to be trickling in very slowly. One of the affected families is that of Patricia Naurom. She looks after her 7 grandchildren and her mother.
I have no money to send my grandchildren to school. I used to have livestock to raise school fees, but they are gone. So all I want is food. Things are tough. Even if I am to go to relatives in Harare, they have their own problems. When you get something, you cook very small portions so that the grandchildren can survive. We even boil groundnuts to eat.
It is these issues that Elhaj Assay, the Secretary General of IFRC, wants to bring to the fore at the World Humanitarian Summit in Istanbul next month. His United Nations counterpart, Ban Ki-moon, is expected to attend the meeting in Turkey together with other humanitarian organizations. Assisi is today expected to launch an appeal for $150 million to ensure that the lives of Nauru, her grandchildren, and other 28 million people in Southern Africa improve. He says they have been assisting the region recover from the effects of El Nino.
We want to double our own response to that, and looking at in the next 7 months to 8 months until the December to mobilize $150 million at least to put into cash transfer programs, looking at support to income generating activities, small water and irrigation project, livelihood and livestock building, and then the capacity building of the communities, the combination of which we believe will go a long way in building resilience.
El Nino-induced drought has not only left 28 million people without food in the Southern African region, but it has also affected some parts of Horn of Africa, including Ethiopia, which has already asked for international assistance to feed about 10 million of its citizens.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare. Prior to his visit to Zimbabwe, El Hadj As-Sai was in Malawi, which is also grappling with drought and is in dire need of food aid. Before we came on air, my colleague Abubakar Jallo spoke to Miriam Kaliza, a DW contributor, and she starts by explaining the situation in her country.
The hunger situation in the country does not look encouraging. I would say it's not yet a crisis, but we have a huge problem which needs to be sorted out as soon as possible before maybe things get out of hand. Maize is a staple food this part of the region. So many people did not invest enough and they don't have. The sad part of it is that maybe vendors who has the maize now have skyrocketed their prices, making it difficult for an average Malawian to get access to the commodity.
Now, you were just talking about shortages of maize there, which is the staple food of Malawi. There are concerns that the number of Malawians facing food shortages could rise from the current 2.8 million. What does this mean for the people of Malawi? Can you please put that into perspective?
To Malawians themselves, they are in terrible situation. It's pathetic. Like, they need prompt assistance before people start thinking of long-term solutions. Currently, the government is trying to mobilize support from the international community, but I think it's not enough. The government needs to support its people currently. According to the Vulnerability Assessment Report, more than 2.8 million Malawians, they are already affected as I'm talking to you now. There are cases such as people may be used to harvest 15 to 20 bags a year, but now they only have one bag. It's so pathetic.
But the president did come out saying that they need assistance from humanitarian agencies. Did that come too late?
I would say the president took his time to declare the state of the food shortage emergency, but he took a brave step. Currently, the humanitarian assistance has been coming, and I think the American government has come in. We expect more help still. But then, just recently, the Secretary General for the International Federation for Red Cross was here for a fact-finding mission on hunger situation in the country. He thinks maybe he may be able to launch a food emergency appeal for Malawi, since he's seen for himself the situation on the ground. So maybe things will get better.
This is not the first time that Malawi is being hit by such disaster. Last year, there was also another climate condition when the country was hit by serious flooding in the southern part of the country. How prepared is Malawi for such emergencies?
I would say for Malawi, it's a little bit difficult. They have the nice policies. They have the best policies in place. But maybe implementation is a problem. Currently, there's a whole department of disaster management and preparedness deliberately set aside to manage shocks the country may experience. They have their policies, they have their nice strategies, but maybe implementation is a problem. On the part of maybe preparedness on the food shortages currently, the country is procuring maize from the neighboring Zambia to cater for the hunger-stricken Malawians. And I would say one problem Malawi has currently is the over-reliance on maize. It's really difficult, but then government is trying, and then international community is also working with the government to ensure that maybe strategies are implemented, and there's a review on the agriculture policies and preparing projects.
Miriam Kaliza, ADW contributor in Malawi.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, hundreds of Cameroonians, Chadians, and Central Africans expelled from Gabon and Equatorial Guinea to Cameroon's southern border town of Kiosi have appealed their respective governments to intervene. The stranded people say they were expelled following what their host governments described as security reasons. They think they have not been treated fairly by authorities in both Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. DW's Mokinzeka reports from Kiosi.
Félix Ngelengele, governor of the southern region of Cameroon that shares a boundary with Equatorial Guinea and Gabon, says he has received close to 100 Cameroonians and many Chadians and Central Africans expelled from Equatorial Guinea since May 1 this year. He says some of them complained that all of their belongings and money was seized, allegedly, by Equatorial Guinea policemen who ransacked their houses and bundled them to the border, telling them never to return.
We insisted that forces of law and order should have information on who was expelled and why was they expelled. We took an assessment of all the control posts in the borders. We equally sent on the field a team to try to sensitize all the stakeholders.
The governor says authorities are cooperating with the administration of Equatorial Guinea to find out why the refugees were forced to go to Cameroon instead of returning to their countries of origin. Bakari Zuli, a 45-year-old engineer from Chad, says all his documents were seized. He says he is stranded in Cameroon and is asking his government to help.
I am surprised that the government of Equatorial Guinea is chasing away people who have helped transform their country of footpaths, forests, and abandoned cocoa plantations into a developing country. In the 15 years I spent in Equatorial Guinea, I have helped turn Bata into a city and deserve some respect for that.
Dont il me doit du respect.
Among those repatriated is Diane Angulu, a Central African who fled the carnage in her country.
J'ai quitté mon pays à cause de la pauvreté.
I left my country to escape poverty and suffering. I saw that my neighbors in Equatorial Guinea were very rich and that they could share their riches with us. They should remember that they were very poor ones, and neighboring countries helped them until they discovered the oil that is now making them rich and stubborn.
Equatorial Guinea went from a poor state to being the strongest growing economy in Central Africa. Gross domestic product grew by 11% when oil was found some 20 years ago. This prompted many youths from Central African states to seek better job opportunities there. Chama Theodore, senior advisor to the governor of Wolentem, one of Equatorial Guinea's 9 administrative provinces, says that the fall of oil prices led many companies to reduce the number of workers. He says the repatriation is felt most in countries that are close to Equatorial Guinea because they have the highest number of emigrants.
Moki Kinzeka reporting. Still to come on the program, Ghana's doctors who declined taking up posts in rural areas and a young woman in South Africa baking birthday cakes for orphans. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host, and I'll be back right after this.
Africa on the move.
For our Africa on the Move segment this week, we head to Kenya, where internet penetration is widening thanks to technological advancements in the country. Statistics show that over 20 million Kenyans use the internet, that is almost half of the total population. Despite this access to internet, bloggers endure harassment from security agencies. The Bloggers Association of Kenya now wants to make use of this opportunity of digital transformation for both social and economic development of the country. This report by Yulia Milke is now presented by Jen Nyingi.
For Ole Shiteni, blogging is not just a hobby. He's been doing it full time for 5 years. The activist would like the public to be better informed by the media. This for him is a prerequisite for good governance and the formation of public opinion. His blogs are well established and recognized.
The biggest challenge for me is the perception that bloggers are paid in Kenya, or that especially bloggers are paid to defame people, to write wrong things about people.
If he's not working from home, Shitemi leaves in the morning to join his blogger community. There are around 15,000 bloggers in Kenya, most of them in Nairobi. Only a few belong to the Bloggers Association of Kenya, BEK. 5 years ago, a small group of internet activists formed BEK. It now has about 2,500 members. They meet at eHub, the unofficial headquarters of Kenya's tech movement. App developers or startup supporters like Nilab work here. The company offers BEK working space and an internet connection. Founding member James Wamadai is aware of the potential in Kenya's blogger scene. Every now and then, he discusses with Shitemi the funds needed to offer regular training to blogger communities nationwide. Wamadai wishes to reach more people.
We'd like to see more and more people, and especially outside of Nairobi. So in essence, they're not only telling their story, they're not only telling the world what's happening in that specific county, but they are also making money from it and employing other people.
So depending on the nature of your idea, different forms of idea.
Each training tightens the network of bloggers, they say, and they get some practical tips, for instance, on how to use social media tools, doing research and the style of writing, as well as how to make money online. For several years, BEK has been holding blog awards. Usually the prize are in different fields, from entertainment, technology, and fashion blogs.
And the winner of this category is Tech Moran.
Life is less glamorous for political bloggers. Arrests have increased since media freedom was further restricted in new laws 2 years ago. BEK offers its members legal advice, and sometimes it extends that service to non-members. James Omadai says that expressing yourself freely online leads to a free society.
We realized if they can target other people, they can also come and target us. So some of these things are very strategic, and we try as much as possible to shine a light on people whose free expression rights online are being infringed upon.
Discovered so many blogs through BEK.
Kenya's bloggers community evolves around glamour and research. A lot more people should take part in the social development of Kenya. Founders of BEK say the blog awards are just the beginning.
That report was by Yulia Milke and presented by Jenny Ngingi. Now, one of Ghana's biggest challenges facing the health sector are the doctors who refuse postings to rural parts of the country. Despite the country's effort to train more doctors, the need for these health workers remains high. As a result, many health facilities in rural communities are short of medical doctors. The problem has been further aggravated by brain drain since most Ghanaian doctors have moved abroad in search for greener pastures. From Northern Ghana, Maxwell Sook sent this report.
It is a bright day at Wulugu, a community in the West Mampusi district, Northern region. These women have gathered for communal work. But it is not the work that catches my attention, but the lyrics of their song. My heart beats as I am dancing is the meaning of their song. It is to criticize the authority for not working on their hospital. According to them, a hospital was built 9 years ago for the community, but since then it has remained a safe haven for ruminants like rats. One of the women, Zara Tuisa, says it is hurtful to see such a nice building not functioning.
It is a pain to come out in times of medical emergency and see that big empty building right there, which is supposed to be our health center, taken over by donkeys and honey-making bees.
Several communities in rural Ghana are in same predicament, living without hospitals because doctors have refused posting to rural areas. Another woman, Sana Tubukari, lives just about 50 meters away from the facility. And she finds it worrying why the facility can't be of help when someone falls sick.
Last year, my son's wife was pregnant. We struggled a lot. It was a shock for us as to why we could not go there for help. We had to look for a car at midnight. It disturbs us a lot.
Tony Goodman, Director of Communication at the Ministry of Health, told me the service has taken a strong stand against doctors who refuse postings to rural areas.
The new ones we are posting now, if you are posted to any part of this country and you did not go, it means that you are out of job. So now we are not backing on that stand at all. If you are posted and you did not go, you can't work in the public sector.
No doctor agreed to speak on tape why they won't accept such postings. But it is the public knowledge that social amenities such as good drinking water, electricity, and schools are absent in the remote areas, and life there may be quite boring. The ministry has started providing the needed amenities to go with the health facilities.
Maxwell Sook sent that report.
Making a difference.
Now, imagine as a child, it is your birthday, but there's no cake to cut or any goodies to share with friends because you are an orphan and can't afford them. Well, this is what 21-year-old Tabile Tabete in South Africa is trying to change by baking cakes for orphans around Johannesburg to celebrate their birthdays. On one day every month, she visits the care centers to celebrate all the children who had a birthday that month. That way she can put a smile on their faces. This report by Stefan Moll is now presented by Love the Right.
Today is Tulizeli Ramphora's 16th birthday. She lives in the Christchurch Christian Care Centre, an orphanage in central Johannesburg. Tulizeli has been looking forward to this day when the care centre organises a party for all birthday boys and girls of the month who live at the orphanage. Everyone gets a piece of cake baked by 21-year-old Tabile Tabete. Her enterprise, Tea Party, also produces patisserie for paying clients. Tabile uses part of her profits for her birthday cake project.
I always liked to volunteer at orphanages. Even when I was younger, I used to volunteer at orphanages. So what actually happened was I was looking for ways to volunteer, and I Googled how to, like, different ways to volunteer, and I came across baking birthday cakes for orphans.
Baking does not only make Tabile happy. The children and the young adults also enjoy celebrating their birthdays. Bonani Mdlovu is one of the birthday boys. He's just turned 19.
It's a nice feeling. You feel welcome. Yeah, you feel appreciated and celebrated.
Birthdays are often difficult days for orphan children. Tulizeli lost her parents 8 years ago. When her grandmother gave her into the custody of the care centre, Tulizeli found a new home and family. The centre took care of her education, and now she would like to study architecture.
For them, education comes first. At home, we had financial problems. They couldn't take me to school. And yeah, that was a problem. And I was living with my grandmother. Yeah, and she couldn't take care of me.
Tabile learned how to bake from her grandmother, who inspired her. Now she wants to do the same for the children at the orphanage.
So we're going to start baking cupcakes today, okay?
Recently, she started to offer baking classes where she teaches young children how to bake great cakes.
With the baking lessons, we try to just make the kids have fun, but at the same time, we also want them to learn. So not only are they learning baking, but they can also learn math at the same time. So this is kind of my way of combining the two things I love. I love children and I love baking, so that's why I thought the baking would be a good idea.
That report was filed by Stefan Moll. And before we call it a day, a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. The Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, El Hajj Assay, has pledged support to countries in Southern Africa that have been hit by an El Niño-induced drought. Hundreds of Cameroonians, Chadians, and Central Africans have been expelled from Gabon and Equatorial Guinea due to security concerns. We've also been hearing from a young South African woman baking cakes for orphans in Johannesburg. There we come to the end of the program. For comments and suggestions, as usual, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW531100 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575950. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a splendid day ahead.